You're listening to the Better for America podcast, presented by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens.
Hello, everyone. I'm Rebecca Weber. This is your AMAC podcast, Better for America. Today, we are genuinely privileged to have with us someone who has already changed America, brought truth and wit, strength and wisdom to the airwaves, and who is about to change history again, if we're lucky, in Ronald Reagan's old state of California. He is well known as a speaker of truth, has been part of the Salem Media Group for years, where he hosts a riveting, powerful, nationally vital show. He is a New York Times bestselling author of four books, including his most recent, A Lot Like Me, A Father and Son's Journey to Reconciliation. And today we are speaking with a man who, if stars align and patriotic Americans turn out to vote, will be the next governor of California. Please welcome the one and only Larry Elder. Larry, welcome.
Rebecca, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. We're blessed. Larry, all eyes today are on Afghanistan, and you have criticized President Biden and his mindless withdrawal, is what you called it, from Afghanistan. We're witnessing dishonor, incompetence, a lack of political will. It seems as if he is making so many bad decision after bad decision. And now we see what's happening over there. And will we end up leaving thousands of Americans and allied Afghans to whom we promise safety at the mercy of the Taliban? So my question for you, Larry, is how do you see this crisis? What allowed it to happen? And what could still be done, in your opinion, to help put any of this right?
Well, Rebecca, we're not quite sure how many people have been left behind because we never got an accurate count on how many Americans were there in the first place. But I'll tell you the genesis of this. And I've criticized both the left and the right for this, Rebecca. The genesis of this is this assertion that we were engaging in, quote unquote, endless wars. I've never understood that expression, endless wars. We have endless enemies. We were there because the Taliban allowed Al-Qaeda to stage, plan, strategize the terror attack of 9/11. That's why we were there. We had tens of thousands of troops there at one time. We got it down to about 4,000. And in 2020, not a single American service person was killed. So as far as I was concerned, it was a holding pattern, not unlike the fact that we've got thousands of troops in Europe, thousands of troops in South Korea, protecting South Korea. We also have troops near Japan. We've had them there for decades. So as far as I was concerned, the enemy could either be fought over there or fought over here. That's why they were there. So I criticized the previous administration for reducing it from 4,000 to 2,000 and for giving some sort of date certain by which time we would leave Afghanistan. The enemy has not left. Islamofascism remains an enemy. So I never have understood this countdown of how many years we were there, calling it, we were there for 20 years, endless war. I thought that was rhetoric, that was irresponsible. But what Joe Biden did is beyond the pale. It is an absolute disaster. He pulls out the troops before the Americans come out, leaving behind all of this material, all this weaponry. And we have no idea how many Americans are there. We have no idea what's going to happen to them. It's an absolute catastrophe. And believe me, if this had happened under Donald Trump and the Democrats had remained the majority in the House, he would have been impeached a third time. It's an absolute travesty. Our enemies no longer fear us. Our allies no longer respect us. I don't know what to say. It's just been absolutely horrible. And all these poor servicemen men and women who served in Afghanistan, who are now going through a whole bunch of depression and post-traumatic stress syndrome, now feeling that their efforts were absolutely, totally in vain. It's an absolute catastrophe. One of the worst things that's ever happened in American history.
Yeah, and I appreciate the fact that you recognize that and that you're really speaking to we have so many, self-sacrificing veterans in our membership, where we're over 2 million members strong. Right. And so to every patriotic American, they care about what this means. We love our country. We pray for our country. Many AMAC members have risked everything for this country. And this is just so tough for us to watch. So thank you so much for everything you do to keep our focus on this national discussion every day, because we do need to discuss it And you're doing exactly that. Larry, you have been a voice of such hope, energy, and principled discussion at a time when America so needs to hear voices of depth, reason, hope, and principle. And so thank you for doing that. I want to start and ask you this. In so many ways, we seem to be at a time of a national crisis, but not just in Afghanistan, here at home on the southern border. With a mismanaged economy, we see crime in our streets. We're hearing about CRT in our schools, divided neighborhoods. Now, you're a proven thinker, a problem solver. So as you look at this recall election in California, are we at a place where Democrats and independents are as fed up as Republicans are with the failures of California's governor and the White House? And do you think that they'll come your way and give you a chance to fix the great state of California?
Well, Rebecca, I do. There were 1.7 million Californians who signed a recall petition. I would say about a quarter to a third of them were independents and Democrats who voted for Gavin Newsom just 2 years earlier. They are absolutely fed up with the way he shut down this state while ignoring science, sitting up there at that famous French Laundry restaurant with the very people that drafted the mandates. They were not wearing masks. They were not engaging in social distancing while telling Californians to do just that. Gavin Newsom's own children were enjoying in-person private education, and nearly a third of all small businesses are now gone forever here in California. Many of them are owned by Black and brown people. I only mention that because the left prides itself on how much they care about Black and brown people. Also, kids in California were denied a whole year of in-person public education. And before the pandemic, Rebecca, the test scores, reading scores were already abysmal, near the bottom of all 50 states. 75% of Black boys pre-pandemic could not read at state levels of proficiency. Nearly half of all third graders cannot read at state levels of proficiency. And the teachers union absolutely hates school choice. One of the things that I'm going to be pushing when I become governor is school choice. So parents can determine whether or not they want to put their kid in an underperforming government school if they choose to, or a charter school, or a private school, or a religious school. There's going to be a ballot initiative here in California to set up education savings accounts so that the $15,000 we spend per student per year would go into that account, and the parent could control where that money goes. My opponent, Gavin Newsom, the largest funder of his campaign has been the teachers union, and they are adamantly opposed to school choice. And I'm telling you, Black and brown parents that have routinely voted for the Democrats are absolutely fed up. Then we have the rise in the cost of living here in California. For the first time, the average price of a home in California, Rebecca, has hit $800,000. That is 150% more than the average price of a home in America. And because of rules and regulations, the average price of a home here in California is literally 50% more than it would be if it weren't for the environmental extremist rules, like a law we have in California called CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act, that essentially allows anybody to stop any housing project for any reason for an indefinite period of time. Then we have the rise in homelessness. It is estimated that we have anywhere from a quarter to almost half of all the nation's homelessness. And what the Democrats want to do, what Gavin Newsom wants to do, is what is called a housing first policy. That is to build housing, by the way, far more expensively than would be the case if the private sector built it, without dealing with the underlying reason why most people are on the streets. And that is primarily due to mental illness and substance abuse. They need to be treated, and government doesn't know how to do that. Churches do, mosques do, synagogues do. We should turn that over to them. And once that is done, they need to have low-cost housing to house them. That is not possible given the outrageous expense of homes here in California. So one of the many things I'm going to do when I become governor is to declare a public emergency on housing so I can suspend or waive some of the rules and regulations that prevent the private sector from building low-cost housing to put the homeless people there once they've been treated. We also have an enormous, enormous departure here in California. For the very first time in our state's 170-year history, people are leaving California. And not just millionaires and billionaires, although they are leaving, but people making between 50 and 100K are leaving. And the number one reason they cite, Rebecca, is they cannot afford a home. And there was just a massive study done by the Hoover Institution, which is a think tank connected with Stanford. And they say for the first 6 months of this year, the rate at which businesses are leaving is twice the rate at which they've left for the previous 3 years. We're not just talking about manufacturing businesses. They don't care about those businesses because they consider them to be polluters. But these are people that are running healthcare businesses and financial services and even tech. And they arrogantly always assumed that tech companies would never leave California. They are leaving California too. And then we have the fires. I'm sure you're watching those fires. They're far more serious than they would be if we had better forest management. And we need to clear millions of acres of fallen trees. They're not being cleared. This governor claimed that he cleared 90,000 acres of fallen trees and dry vegetation, which frankly would be a drop in the bucket. The outgoing governor, Jerry Brown, had a plan to clear 500,000 acres. And it turns out that Gavin Newsom claimed he cleared 90,000, which, as I said, would have been a drop in the bucket, but he exaggerated by a factor of 7. He only cleared about 13% of what he said he cleared. We have rolling brownouts here in California because we're not properly investing in our energy grid. And believe it or not, we have a water shortage. Israel is a desert country. Because of desalination plants, they are now water self-sufficient because they've got a body of water next to them called the Mediterranean. We have a body of water next to us called the Pacific Ocean, and we can't figure this out. So crime is going up, homelessness is going up, the cost of living is outrageous. The man shut down the state while ignoring science. We have a departure of California for the first time, bad forest management, bad energy policies. You add it all up and you're right. Democrats and independents, and of course Republicans, want this man out.
Yeah, I think the entire nation and perhaps political observers beyond the nation are going to certainly have their eyes on California. And I appreciate you explaining why a party change is key. And you've laid out so many good points. So I do think if another Democrat wins, that it'll be just like playing a game of musical chairs. We're going to see more of the same. And we know that change must be big. And we know that if you win, you will certainly bring good change to California. Larry, I want to ask you another question regarding recent elections. We've seen so many Hispanic voters now realizing that the Republican Party is a better protector of the things that they feel are important, deeply held religious beliefs and faith, family, hard work, as an example. And these, of course, are the same values that AMAC fights for each and every day. As you look at the recall election in California, will we see a Hispanic swing towards the GOP just as 2020 saw former President Trump picking up large numbers of Hispanic voters? And do you think that will also be a shift in this election? What do you think is possible?
You know, Rebecca, I think one of the big stories about this recall is that very thing. About 65% of Hispanics voted for Gavin Newsom just 2 years ago. Now the majority of Hispanics want him recalled. They're the only so-called minority group that wants him recalled, the majority of whom wants him recalled. I say so-called minority because they're the largest plurality here in California. So it's kind of strange calling them a minority, but the majority of them now want him recalled. And the big reason is because of the quality of public education. 80% of the kids educated in government schools here in California are Black and Brown, and they know they're getting the worst possible outcomes. They're getting the worst teachers, the worst principals, the worst bureaucrats. But the other big reason is crime. As I mentioned, crime is up, and I'm talking about violent crime, shootings, homicides up in Oakland, up in San Francisco, up in Los Angeles, up in San Diego. And the disproportionate victims of this uptick in crime are Black and Brown people, again, the people that the left prides itself on caring about. And the other reason, as I mentioned, is the cost of living. The average person now can no longer afford to buy a home here in California. So you add up the poor quality of public education, crime, and the inability to buy that first home, and a whole bunch of Hispanics who just voted for this man 2 years earlier have now changed their mind. Also, the majority of independents, we call them non-party preference here in California, and they outnumber registered Republicans. The majority of independents also want Gavin Newsom gone. So you add up the Hispanics and the independents, and it is really a groundswell. And that is why when Gavin Newsom tries to characterize this as a Republican takeover, it really is quite insulting to all the people in California who never voted for Donald Trump, would not vote for Donald Trump if you paid him $1 million, but now are concerned about the rise in the cost of living, the decline in the quality of education, the outrageous rise in homelessness, the fires, the lack of water, and the fact that I said before, for the very first time, you're having a net migration out of the state of California. Add it all up, this is across the board anger at Gavin Newsom, and that is why, in my opinion, come September the 14th, which is the date of the recall election, although the ballots have already gone out and you can vote now, between now and then, I believe he's going to be gone. And I urge all people to vote now, vote early, send in your ballot or drop off your ballot at a voting place. And let's get this guy out. And I also am urging people, Rebecca, to go to electelder.com and throw a little something in the tip jar, because my opponent, Gavin Newsom, will be able to raise and spend an unlimited amount of money. He's already raised around $50 million from the usual suspects, the teachers unions, the public sector unions, Hollywood and big tech. I'm going to be outspent probably by a factor of 10 to 1. So I need a little help to make this somewhat of a fair fight. Go to electelder.com.
Thank you, Larry. And I do want to mention, you know, people know California, it's a diverse and historically strong dynamic state. Do you think that Asian Americans view Governor Newsom and the Democratic Party as in sync or aligned with their priorities? Because it seems that Asian Americans are winning as GOP candidates across California. And we saw that in 2020. Is there a shift occurring toward the Republican Party among all sorts of voters, especially Asian Americans in California?
You know, I've been giving a lot of interviews to Asian American media, and I'll tell you what they're angry about. There's a high school here in California called Lowell High School, L-O-W-E-L-L. It's probably the finest public high school in California. At one time, it had an admissions exam to get in, and about 60 to 70% of the student body was Asian American. I say was because they've gotten away with the admissions test beginning this year because they felt the student body was insufficiently diverse. Arguably the finest public school in the country is in Fairfax, Virginia. It's called the Thomas Jefferson School of Science and Technology. It too had an admissions exam until this year. Also because the school was, quote, insufficiently diverse, close quote, they've gotten away from using the admissions exam. This is an assault on merit, assault on the high achieving Asian American kids. And a lot of Asian Americans here in California and nationwide are quite angry about that. Some years ago, we had a proposition in California called Proposition 209 to get rid of the use of race in admissions in colleges and universities in our public system here in California. Voters passed it, and the result was the following. At the most competitive campuses, UCLA and UC Berkeley, the percentage of Asian Americans who got in went up pretty dramatically. The percentage of Black and Brown students went down pretty dramatically. But the overall number of Black and Brown students at all of the public colleges, UC system here in California, was the same. It turned out that the Black and Brown students got into the lesser competitive campuses like UC Irvine and UC Riverside. And by the way, were more likely to graduate on time. And in their place, a bunch of Asian Americans at UCLA and Berkeley got in, which meant that Asian Americans were being hurt and discriminated against in favor of lesser qualified Black and Brown students. Percentage of white students remained the same at Berkeley and UCLA. But the ones who were hurt were Asian American students. It was an assault on merit against the Asian American students at UCLA, UC Berkeley, just like it's an assault on Asian American students at Lowell High School. So a lot of Asian Americans are very upset about this. And for that reason, I think they're rethinking their allegiance to the Democratic Party, not to the extent that Hispanics are, but what you're finding an absolute shift, because I'm asked questions about Lowell High School and about the attack on merit from these hardworking, high achieving Asian American kids.
Yeah, very, very interesting. There are ways in which the California's recall election reflects the kinds of national distrust and disgust that voters have with many of the current Democrat leaders. So I do want to ask you, other than COVID, we didn't talk about COVID. I want to ask you about COVID, but we know that the homelessness is soaring, high taxes, job killing regulations. You mentioned water issues, public debt. As it relates to COVID-19 and the policies that Newsom put in place there, what are your thoughts and how might you operate differently if elected governor of California?
Well, I certainly would not have shut down the state the way he did. I'm not anti-vaccine. I've been vaccinated because of my age. I'm in a high-risk category. And I also have an unusual blood condition, and my doctor strongly advised me to become vaccinated. However, virtually everybody in the state of California who wants to be vaccinated can be vaccinated, and poor people can be vaccinated for free. What Gavin Newsom has done recently is to tell every state worker, if you've not been vaccinated, you're going to be tested once a week. And you're going to be required to wear a face mask at work. When I become governor, to the extent that these kinds of mandates for state workers are still into effect, I'm going to repeal them before I have my first cup of tea. It's absolutely outrageous. Now, a lot of people have made a very different decision about the vaccine, either because they've contracted the coronavirus and they now feel they have immunities, or because they listened to Kamala Harris and Joe Biden when they said during the campaign, if Donald Trump told me to take the vaccine, I'm not going to take it. Recall that Kamala Harris also said that during one of the debates. And of course, the vaccine came about because of Donald Trump's Operation Warp Speed. The CDC, the FDA has approved it on an emergency basis, and a lot of people don't trust it. And more than that, I was at a campaign stop once, Rebecca, and I went into a coffee shop, and I noticed that half the wait staff was wearing face masks and half were not. I was waited on by a young lady who turned out to be a college senior, and she wasn't wearing a face mask. And I asked her what the policy was inside the store. And she said, well, my boss allows us to wear a face mask or not wear a face mask. And I said, have you been vaccinated? And she said, no. And I said, may I ask why? And she smiled and she said, well, you can ask, but I don't feel I have to give you a reason. Now, isn't this America? Didn't Thomas Jefferson warn us about trading freedom for public safety? And she also said that in my own household, my mother is a registered nurse, she said, and she has a different attitude about face masks and about vaccines. So within that household, there were differences of opinion, and there were differences of opinion all across California. I don't have the power to outlaw the mandating of face masks and outlaw the mandating of vaccines at the local level, at school districts, and of course, in the private sector. But I can do what I can do at the state level. And again, for all state workers who are mandated to be tested and mandated to wear face masks at work, I will do away with that as one of my first acts of being governor.
Thank you, Larry. I know that you've got a busy schedule. I've got time for one more quick question. I'd like for you to share a few thoughts about our education system. You've spoken a lot about this problem, where education is heading, and that affects the future of our country, obviously. Now, AMAC is doing so much work to inform the public about critical race theory, or CRT, as it's called. We know that it's a big concern to our over 2 million members. So AMAC has sent out thousands of emails to Americans warning them about the dangers of teaching this, what we call a Marxist theory, to children. How would you help restore honest, patriotic, quality education? You mentioned some ideas just a few minutes ago. And what are your thoughts on critical race theory? And can you help us share your opinion and inform our members what they need to know? And then for those members living in California, what your thoughts are on how California will handle critical race theory teaching in the school systems?
Well, I consider it to be a hideous, hideous kind of indoctrination. That's teaching young children, white children, that they are oppressors, teaching people of color that they are eternal victims. It's an outrage. Now, at the state level, I'm going to have control over some of the curricula here in California. And to the extent that I have the power to shut it down, I absolutely will. And Rebecca, it's one of the many reasons why parents are increasingly angry at public school systems and why they are considering taking their kids out, putting them into a different kind of school, even engaging in homeschooling. I've never even had a coherent definition of what critical race theory, other than it basically claims that America is systemically racist, remains systemically racist. White people are eternal oppressors, and Black people and brown people are eternal victims. And that everything that you can look to in a disparate outcome has to do with racism. It's outrageous. The biggest disparity going on in this country right now, Rebecca, is the fact that 70% of Black children enter the world without a father married to the mother. That has nothing to do with critical race theory, has nothing to do with racism, has everything to do with the welfare state. In 1965, 25% of Black children entered the world without a father married to the mother. And forget about Elder Barack Obama once said, a kid raised without a father is 5 times more likely to be poor and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in prison. We ought to be talking about why right now 70% of Black children enter the world without a father married to the mother. And I argue that the welfare state has incentivized women to marry the government and has incentivized men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility. That's the discussion we ought to be having, not critical race theory. It's an outrage. And to the extent that I have any kind of control over that kind of curriculum when I'm government, when I'm governor, it is going to be absolutely gone.
Thank you, Larry. Larry, you are a beacon, and we're so glad to know you. We're very, very fortunate to have you here with us speaking and also leading and standing up for truth every single day. So America is so lucky to have you. We pray that you will be leading California ahead, and we look forward to seeing you again soon. I want to thank you so much for your time, your insights, and your example, Larry.
Well, Rebecca, thank you for having me. Sorry about my voice. It's early in the morning. ElectElder.com, ElectElder.com. Thank you so much.
God bless. Excellent. And I just want to thank every AMAC member out there for tuning in today. If you haven't downloaded the AMAC News app, you can watch, you can listen to today's podcast plus track breaking news here. Please make sure to hit that subscribe button and follow, like, and share wherever you are on social media. Until next time, I'm Rebecca Weber, and this is your podcast, Better for America. Thank you for being here, and God bless you. Until next time, have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Better for America podcast. To learn more about AMAC and all it has to offer, visit us at www.amac.us.